Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Garantaraj, Shrimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Nitai Gopriman. Okay. So we're on chapter 8. Last week we did verses 1 to 12. Tonight we're going to finish the chapter, which is from 12 till 46. So it's a lot of verses. We have to make up some time because we missed one class last week because devotees were away. There's not a lot of purport, so we can do it. Is Bhakti Rasamrita Swami in Melbourne yet? Or? He's not in Melbourne yet. He comes tomorrow. So. Okay. So, tonight we'll finish chapter 8. Tomorrow night we'll begin chapter 9. Next Monday we'll do a revision of the first 8 chapters. The following Monday we'll do the closed book exam. What date will that be? 2 Mondays? Yeah, 2. Does anyone have a calendar? Not next Monday, but the one after that. Next Monday will be the revision of chapters 1 to 8, and then the following Monday, which is the 12th of May. So Monday the 12th of May, which is 2 Mondays from now. Is that right?
Yeah.
So 12th of May, closed book exam. It means your open book exams are also due on the 12th of May. You'll get penalised, you'll lose points if you hand them in after the 12th of May. Is everyone happy with that? So we'll continue with the churning of the ocean and milk by the demigods and the demons. And we'll see. Tonight, Lakshmi Devi herself will come out of the ocean. The great sages performed the bathing ceremony of the goddess of fortune as directed in the authorized scriptures. The Gandharvas chanted all auspicious Vedic mantras. And the professional women, dancers, were very nicely danced and sang authorized songs prescribed in the Vedas. The clouds, in personified form, beat various types of drums, known as mridangas, panavas, mirajas, and anikas. They also blew conch shells and bugles, known as gomukas, and played flutes and stringed instruments. The combined sound of these instruments was tumultuous. Thereafter, the great elephants from all the directions carried big water jugs full of Ganges water and bathed the goddess of fortune to the accompaniment of Vedic mantras chanted by learned brahmanas. While thus being bathed, the goddess of fortune maintained her original style with a lotus flower in her hand, and she appeared very beautiful. The goddess of fortune is the most chaste, for she does not know anyone but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Janeshwar, would you like to read that?
The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is described in this verse as Shriyam, which means that she has 6 opulences: wealth, strength, influence, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. These opulences are received from the goddess of fortune. Lakshmi is addressed here as Devi, the goddess, because in Vaikuntha she supplies all opulence to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees, who in this way enjoy natural life in the Vaikuntha planets. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased with his consort, the goddess of fortune, who carries a lotus flower in her hands. Mother Lakshmi is described in this verse as Sati, the supremely chaste, because she never diverts her attention from the Supreme Personality of Godhead to human eyes.
Okay, any points?
Shriyam. All the 6 opulences Shriyam.
I thought all these 6 opulences is present in Krishna.
Either is a bird or bird.
They both have them. Any other points? Anything else?
It's easier that she supplies all the occupancies to the Supreme Lord. How do we understand that?
Okay, we'll explain later. So, any other points?
Supremely chaste.
She's Shakti. The Lord is Shaktiman. So in that sense, she is still subordinate to the So she, the wealth that she has is and therefore the Lord's wealth, but she uses that in his service whenever he wants. That's all.
Yes. Any other points?
I thought Lakshmi Devi is the expansion of Rukmini Ji. So I was just wondering why is Lakshmi called the most chaste?
Well, all of the Lord's consorts are the most chaste because it's the same person. So, okay. So the Bhagavatam's declaration in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam is that Krishna is the absolute truth. He is Swayam Bhagavan. All of these personalities, all of these incarnations, are simply expansions of Krishna. So Narayan is an expansion of Swayam Bhagavan, the original Krishna. And Lakshmi is the expansion of the expansion of the original goddess Bhojan, Mahalakshmi, who is Srimati Radharani herself. So Radharani is the personification of Krishna's Hladini Shakti. Hladini Shakti means his pleasure potency. So how does God derive pleasure? In order to get pleasure, then he manifests himself as his pleasure potency. Right? So Radha and Krishna are one in one sense. But in order for pastimes to take place eternally, this is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, they divide themselves eternally as the consort and the original personality. Now, the Hladini Shakti means the pleasure potency. That is personified as Radharani. So Radharani has the full potency to fully satisfy Krishna. No one else can satisfy Krishna fully. And therefore, Krishna, he is always desiring the association and the company of Srimati Radharani. And actually, Krishna, in his original form, as a cowherd boy, the Swayam Bhagavan, he is always thinking of Srimati Radharani. He doesn't divert his attention, because only in her does he find complete pleasure. She is the only person capable of fully satisfying him. And Jiva Goswami even says, if no one else existed except Radharani, Krishna would be fully satisfied. And we can't say that about anyone else. Imagine if it was only us. Just us and Krishna. We can't fully satisfy Krishna, but Radharani can. So then, why do we all exist? Because Radharani wants to share Krishna with others. So because she desires that Krishna becomes shared with others, then we all manifest. And then Radharani, she shares Krishna with us. Therefore, Prabhupada says that you must approach Radharani if you want Krishna's mercy. He wrote that on the Jaladutta when he arrived in America. I tell you, brothers, that you will find your good fortune only when you receive the mercy of Srimati Radharani. Yeah, so Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada also says, he also writes, that if we approach Krishna directly, we will not get Krishna's attention. But if we approach Krishna through Radharani, and we say, Krishna, say, Radharani, please offer this service to Krishna, then Radharani will turn to Krishna and say, this person who is more qualified than me, please accept his service. He is a great devotee. So by her recommendation, then we will get Krishna's attention. Otherwise, it's not possible to directly approach Krishna. And in the spiritual world, if we get back to the spiritual world, our constitutional position will simply be a servant of the servant of the servant. And it will only be offering service to others so that they can then pass that service to Lord Krishna. So that is our constitutional position. And Radharani is the... she is the source of Ladini Shakti. She is the source of Krishna's pleasure. Without Radharani, Krishna cannot enjoy fully. It is only by her... it's by her potency that he receives pleasure. Any other points?
See, Radharani is in Dwarka, she is Satyabhama. So, I mean, and they say that Rukmini is the...
Chandravali.
So she is the topmost.
In Dwarka, so, yeah.
So how do I understand?
Krishna doesn't get as much pleasure from the queens in Dwarka as he does from the gopis in Vrindavan. If you read Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Krishna, while he's asleep next to Rukmini, then he, while he's sleeping, then he says, O Radhe, O Lalite, O Vishakhe. So he's calling out to the gopis in Vrindavan. So Rukmini, she's talking to Satyabhama. She says, when he's dreaming, he's actually thinking of the gopis. He's not thinking of us. And she, and then Satyabhama says, not even when he's dreaming, when he's daydreaming. Even when he's awake and he's with us, sometimes he's there and he's with us during the day and he's awake. And he starts saying, hey, Radhe, hey, hey, Lalite, hey, Vishakhe. So he's always thinking of them.
So Satyabhama's position should be...
She's just an expansion of Radharani, that's all.
So her position should be on the top rather than Rukmini.
Yeah, but in Dwarka, Rukmini is the top, is the superior.
Any reason?
Because the rasa is different. Because Rukmini is subordinate to Krishna, and Satyabhama is Bhama. Bhama means unsubmissive. Mm-hmm. So in Dwarka, Rukmini gives Krishna great pleasure because she's very submissive. But in Vrindavan, Krishna gets more pleasure from the gopis on Radharani's camp who are unsubmissive.
Oh, right.
The mood is different in Dwarka and Vrindavan. Any other points?
How do you understand that point that she is giving those abilities to Krishna? So it's because she is the Radhini Shakti, that's why she is giving.
It means that Krishna derives the greatest pleasure from her association because she has all of the opulences. They both have them. Prabhupada says actually that they are the same person. It's one person. But in order to enjoy pastimes, Chaitanya Charitamrita explains, they divide eternally. He is the supreme personality of Godhead. She is the supreme pleasure potency of God. So they are the perfect equal match. He is the supreme male. She is the supreme female. So she has all of God's opulence. In other words, who is the most beautiful man? It is Krishna. Who is the most beautiful woman? It is Radharani. So they fully. So only she can. She has all the opulence to fully satisfy him. Any other points?
Can it be that because she has, Lord Krishna has been having everything?
Yeah. Someone has to has it, has to have it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. They eternally, they're, both of them exist eternally. So she's always there, he's always there. There's no Krishna without Radha. There's no Radha without Krishna. That's it's eternally like that. Just down here we have philosophy. In the spiritual world they don't discuss it like this. In the spiritual world there's no discussion. You know, where did we come from? Who got it? You know, like that. Down here, we have to understand all the philosophy, so we become convinced. But in the spiritual world, the gopis don't sit around and say, oh, Radha, you know, you expanded from Krishna, and then you have all of his opulences. You know, it doesn't go like that. Because they just love each other, and everyone's just fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and everything's perfect. But down here, we have to sit in the
Bhaktivedanta course for 8 years to try to understand. And even then we don't understand. So it's all down here, it's just based on philosophy. Philosophy is not so important in the spiritual world. And the philosophy is just here to bring us to the spiritual world. The ocean, which is the source of all valuable jewels, supplied the upper and lower portions of a yellow silken garment. The predominating deity of the water, Varuna, presented flower garlands surrounded by six-legged bumblebees, drunken with honey.
When bathing the deity in the Abhishek ceremony with various liquids such as milk, honey, yogurt, ghee, cow dung and cow urine, it is customary to supply yellow garments. In this way, the Abhishek ceremony for the goddess of fortune was performed according to the regular Vedic principles.
So you see, in the spiritual world, Krishna enjoys natural opulence. Krishna prefers natural things. Milk, ghee, yogurt, cow dung, cow urine. That Krishna just prefers natural opulence. This is actually opulence, is nature. Nature is opulence. Going out to Hare Krishna Valley, that is opulence. Everyone gets there and they say, oh, it's so nice here, it's so nice here. That's opulence. Opulence is not living in the city with plastic and, you know, technology and all that. That's not real opulence. In Kali Yuga, we think opulence is something different. If we have a motor car or something like that, it's not really opulence. If it was opulence, Krishna would have those things. Why in Krishna's pastimes you don't hear that he is driving a Ferrari? Or if it was the best thing, he'd be driving it. Right? So why is he driving a golden chariot? Or why in Vrindavan he doesn't wear shoes? Not wearing shoes is the highest opulence. We think, oh, if we have a nice pair of Birkenstocks or, you know, Windsor Smith or something, then we feel very proud and attached. But in the spiritual world, real opulence is just going barefoot. So you see here in the Bhagavatam that when Krishna wants to enjoy him, when there's an Abhishek, it's just natural ingredients. And actually the cow supplies the greatest opulence for humanity. What you can get from the cow is the topmost pleasure. If you don't have dairy, then how could we enjoy? There's not so much enjoyment without dairy in the diet. Any points?
Actually, after of all the ingredients, except for the honey, everything comes from the cow. Everything is.
Really surprising pastimes, like in between the churning of the ocean, this entire side pastime is happening of Abhishek of the Devi and Lakshmi Devi. So it's very amazing to read all these things that you read about it.
Or maybe the churning's finished by now. Yeah, it's not exactly clear what the order is of everything going on, but whether she's the last thing to come out of the ocean. The Vishwakarma, one of the Prajapatis, supplied varieties of decorated ornaments. The goddess of learning, Saraswati, supplied a necklace. Lord Brahma supplied a lotus flower, and the inhabitants of Nagaloka supplied earrings. So Prabhupada has already said in the third canto that real opulence means jewels and precious metals. These days we all wear plastic. And it's not opulence. Like that. Real opulence means something which actually has value. Like that. Prabhupada said we should not offer real jewels to the deities in Kali Yuga, because people would just come and steal them. You see, that's what happens. Whenever they find jewels in India that belong to the deities, the government takes it also. Thereafter, Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, having been properly celebrated with an auspicious ritualistic ceremony, began moving about, holding in her hand a garland of lotus flowers, which were surrounded by humming bumblebees. Smiling with shyness, her cheeks decorated by her earrings, she looked extremely beautiful. Shukadev Prabhu, you like to read that?
goddess of fortune, Mother Lakshmi, accepted the ocean of milk as her father. But she apparently, she perpetually rests on the bosom of Narayana. She offers benediction even to Lord Brahma and other living entities in this material world. Yet she is transcendental to all material qualities. Although she appeared to have been born in the ocean of milk, she immediately resorted to her eternal place on the bosom of God.
So in the Bhagavatam, we always hear about appearance pastimes, but all of these personalities are eternal. Radharani appears, Krishna appears, Sudarshan Chakra appears, Krishna's bow, what's Krishna's bow's name? No, Gandivas.
Saranga?
Yeah, Shanga, yeah. Shanga Dhanava, it's one of Krishna's names. So his bow appears and all these things appears, but it's not that they are not with the Lord eternally. That is his eternal paraphernalia. So the goddess of fortune appears, it just means this is an appearance pastime in this world. The Acharyas explain this is one difference between the spiritual world and the material world. One of the differences in the material world, there is Jammalila, an appearance pastime, because otherwise everyone would become confused. Krishna needs a human-like appearance. But in the spiritual world, there's no Jammalila. There's no birth pastime of Krishna or the goddess of fortune. So in this world, whenever someone appears, there is some Jamma Leela. Ramachandra has an appearance, Sita has an appearance, Nisringadeva has an appearance, Korma, Matsya, Varaha, everyone has an appearance. But in the spiritual world, there is no Jamma Leela. But it just gives some normality or human-like appearance to their pastimes. Her two breasts, which were symmetrical and nicely situated, were covered with sandalwood pulp and kumkum powder, and her waist was very thin. As she walked here and there, her ankle bells jingled softly, and she appeared like a creeper of gold. While walking among the Gandhavas, Yakshas, Asuras, Siddhas, Charanas, and denizens of heaven, Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, was scrutinizingly examining them. But she could not find anyone naturally endowed with all good qualities. None of them were devoid of faults, and therefore she could not take shelter of any of them. Jamuna Jivan, what do we
The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, having been generated from the ocean of milk, was the daughter of the ocean. Thus she was allowed to select her own husband in a Swayamvara ceremony. She examined every one of the candidates, but she could not find anyone suitably qualified to be her shelter. In other words, Narayana, the natural husband of Lakshmi, cannot be superseded by anyone in this material world.
Is there any points?
Narayana is the topmost.
Wherever you go, your eternal position would be revealed, at least for the spiritual people. Her eternal position
has to be revealed at Narayana. So, she can't find anyone else to take a shelter. Yeah, so we'll see in the 10th canto that when Rukmini, Krishna, he jokes with her one time in Dwarka, and Krishna says, "Why did you marry me?" He said, "There's so many better husbands that you could have had Shishupal or Dantavakra or Jarasandha." Or he said, "You could have married so many. Why did you marry me?" But then she says, "Then why would I marry someone whose body is material? Your body is spiritual, so why would I marry someone who has a material body? Your body is far superior. You are far superior." So even though she's going past the most qualified personalities in this material world, she has no attraction to them. Lakshmi is just walking past all the demigods and she thinks they're just... Everyone has a fault. But the only person who doesn't have a fault is Krishna. And his expansions, Narayana, and all the other expansions. So when you see the Lord, there is no defect. But in everyone else in creation, there is a defect. So therefore, she cannot be attracted to anyone but Krishna, Narayan. So we should also learn to be like that. We always take second best, or third best, or fourth best, or 10,000th best. We become so attached to men and women in this world who are like frogs. Prabhupada says, compared to the denizens of Swaga, the most beautiful women and men in this world are like frogs. But we're so attached to the men and women on this planet, to the material form. But in the spiritual world, no one is attached or attracted to the material form. Everyone is attracted to spirit. Everyone is attracted to Krishna, Sachidananda Vigraha. So we should also learn to be like that. We should only be attached to Krishna. Like Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami was very rich. He was very handsome and he had a most beautiful wife. But he had no attraction to anything. He was only attracted to one thing, and that was to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in the middle of the night, he got up and he ran for days and days and days from Bengal to Jagannath Puri just to find Lord Chaitanya. So that should also be our consciousness. Give up everything and just be attached to Lord Chaitanya. Well, Lord Chaitanya said to Raghunath Das Goswami earlier, he said, don't be a madman. Stay with your family, but in your heart be attached to Krishna. And he said, one day Krishna will release you from all of your material engagements. And that's what happened to him. One day he was released from everything. Any points?
Who was released?
Raghunath Das Goswami. Which one are we on?
20.
The goddess of fortune, examining the assembly, thought in this way. Someone who has undergone great austerity has not yet conquered anger. Someone possesses knowledge, but he has not conquered material desires. Someone is a very great personality, but he cannot conquer lusty desires. Even a great personality depends on something else. How then can he be the supreme controller? Jimuna Lila, that's written.
Here is an attempt to find the supreme controller or Ishvara. Everyone may be accepted as an Ishvara or controller, but still such controllers are controlled by others. For example, one may have undergone severe austerities, but still be under the control of anger. By a scrutinizing analysis, we find that everyone is controlled by something else. No one therefore can be the true controller, but the supreme personality of God and Krishna. This is supported by the Shastra, Ishvara Parama Krishna. The supreme controller is Krishna. Krishna is never controlled by anyone, for he is the controller of everyone. Sarva Karana Karana.
So what are the points?
Krishna is the supreme controller. But he is controlled by Radharani. By her love and service.
Anything else?
Everyone in the material world are bound by the three modes of religion.
What happens in the spiritual world?
They're not bound by the three modes, they're bound by love.
Any other? So actually, this is what sannyas means in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. Sannyas means that one has surrendered himself fully to Krishna. He becomes Krishna's, you could say, servant or maidservant. So that is the mood of a sannyasi. Body,
mind, and words only for Krishna. So he gives up relationship in this world, which is a very powerful vow, a very powerful austerity. Very difficult to give up relationship in this world. Everyone wants a husband, everyone wants a wife. It's very difficult to renounce these things. But the sannyasi, he has conquered sex desire, and Prabhupada said that is why we bow down to the sannyasi, because he has conquered sex desire, and therefore he is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So he understands that Krishna is my only master, whereas in the material world, we are attracted and attached to serving so many other people. But a sannyasi, then he is glorified because he is fully surrendered to Krishna. That is his consciousness. So if we cannot be sannyasis, then we should serve sannyasis. And gradually we will become sannyas in our consciousness. We may not take sannyas, but we may, in our consciousness, will gradually become purified. So the body, the mind, and the words are in Krishna's service. Any points? Well, we should understand there are four types of sannyasis, and it's only the final one is the Paramahamsa. So we discussed this in the end of Canto 7 when the Varnashram system was done. So we should understand that not that necessarily the sannyasis in ISKCON, that they're 100% free of sex desire. Even my Guru Maharaj said to one of my godbrothers, he said, not that sannyasis are free from sex desire, but they tolerate it. So we offer respect, because we can't even tolerate it. So at least they've conquered, that is Goswami, they have control of the senses. So maybe they're not Paramahamsa, that's the fourth stage, but they are Goswami, so at least we offer respect to their achievement. So the point is that if someone's more advanced than you, then you serve them, you respect them, and you try to get their association. So there's a lot of people who are more advanced than us, so we should try to. And the sannyasi is definitely more advanced than us, so we should take advantage. If we become too analytical or too, we scrutinize them too much, or it's not healthy. It's just a materialistic mentality. It's just the nature of the material world. Anyone who's better than us, we want to find fault, so have to be careful. So, any points?
So does it mean that Ishvara word should be used only for Lord Krishna or Vishnu?
Ultimately, yeah. Ultimately. Anyone can be an Ishvara. We're Ishvaras as well. We're controllers, but our control is limited. Whereas Krishna is Parameshwara, which means unlimited control. Any other points?
In India, they give a lot of respect to sannyasis. That is one of the reasons why Mahaprabhu took sannyasis.
Yeah, it's true. And ISKCON, they give a lot of respect to sannyasis as well. Whenever a sannyasi comes, we step on everyone else so we can serve the sannyasis. Push out everyone out of the way so you can serve the sannyasi. Oh Maharaj, oh Maharaj.
So here, supreme controller means Maheshwara.
Yeah, Maheshwara. Maheshwara or Parameshwara. Like that, so. Shiva is also called Maheshwara, Mahadev. So.
But he gets angry.
Lord Shiva?
So,
Krishna gets angry as well.
Does he?
Krishna?
He's always smiling.
Is there any pastime where he gets angry?
Quite
a few. Yeah. It's in him as well. He has anger within him as well.
Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says only one incarnation does not get angry. Nityananda. He does not get angry, but everyone else gets angry. All the other incarnations show anger. Nityananda will not show it. Yeah, he also kicks Shivan under sand in the chest. The whole village will want that. Yeah, I mean,
usually.
Lila.
Yeah, pretty much he doesn't. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says he is the Akroda avatar, means he does not show anger. Maybe when he shows it, he's still smiling. Because that's his nature, he's always like in that joking kind of playful. So maybe when he kicks Shivan under sand in the chest, then he's still happy, even though he's angry. So maybe it's something like that. But generally, there's very little anger in Nityananda Prabhu.
He's angry on you, the picture in the temple.
Yeah, Balaram. Balaram shows anger, but Nityananda Prabhu, generally, you'll not see anger. Which one are we on? Someone may possess full knowledge of religion but still not be kind to all living entities. In someone, whether human or demigod, there may be renunciation, but that is not the cause of liberation. Someone may possess great power and yet be unable to check the power of eternal time. Someone else may have renounced attachment to the material world, yet he cannot compare to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, no one is completely freed from the influence of the material modes of nature. Would have abundant pool.
The statement Dharma Kavachit Tapkana Buddha Sautram is very important in this verse. We actually see that there are many Hindus, Muslims, Christians, and Buddhists, and religionists of other cults, who adhere to their religious principles very nicely, but are not equal to all living entities. Indeed, although they profess to be very religious, they kill poor animals. Such a religion has no meaning. Srimad Bhagavatam 128 says, Dharma Swastina Humsam Disvakshena Padavita Nor Padiya Yerapim Sarma Yerapim Deva. One may be very expert in following the religious principle of his own sect, but he has no tendency to love Supreme Personality or Godhead. His observance of religious principle is simply a waste of time. One must develop a sense of loving Vasudeva. Vasudeva Sarvamiti, the Mahatma Sudarpana. A sign of a devotee is that he is a friend to everyone. Suram Sarva Bhutana. A devotee will never allow a poor animal to be killed in the name of religion. This is the difference between a superficially religious person and a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We find that there have been many great heroes in history, but they could not escape from the cruel hands of death. Even the greatest hero cannot escape from the ruling power of Supreme Personality of Godhead when Krishna comes as death. That is described by Krishna himself, Murtyu Sarvakarsha Saham. The Lord appearing as death takes away a hero's so-called power. Even Hiranyakashipu could not be saved when Narasimhadeva appeared from before him as death. One's material strength is nothing before the strength of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Any points?
So Prabhupada
criticizes so-called Dharma, which the Bhagavatam says in the beginning is Kaitava Dharma. Kaitava Dharma means cheating religion. I am religious, yet I kill animals, I eat animals. Even though telling me the other day that the Vatican, which is like the seat of the Catholic Church, They have an abattoir in the Vatican itself. They kill the lambs fresh and take them up to the Pope and the cardinals and everything like that. So there's cheating religion. They call themselves the heads of the church, the heads of the religion, but it's not really religion. It's Kaitava Dhamma. It's cheating. It's not really religion, not Sanatana Dhamma. So Prabhupada would always criticize this. And in Kali Yuga, this becomes very prevalent. Prabhupada even says in one purport, he said it almost makes you, how does he say it, despondent or unenthusiastic to see so much of this cheating religion in Kali Yuga. So hard to preach in Kali Yuga. So much Mayavad philosophy, so much cheating religion, so hard to spread Krishna consciousness. Because everyone just wants something false. And you give them the real thing, and then they don't take it. Everyone wants the cheating thing. That's the nature of the age. So we just preach boldly and leave the results to Krishna, whatever will come. Any points?
So what I understand that it really just means is to love Krishna as well as see everybody as your friend.
Yeah, be friendly to everyone.
Yeah. Otherwise you're not religious.
Otherwise you're not what?
They're not religious.
Yeah, see everyone as your friend. Prabhupada says, except the tiger.
Well, Krishna do, but you have to just be aware of it.
Yeah.
Don't be angry on him.
Stay on the other side of the fence.
Yeah.
Someone may have longevity, but not have auspiciousness or good behavior. Someone may have both auspiciousness and good behavior, but the duration of his life is not fixed. Although such demigods as Lord Shiva have eternal life, they have inauspicious habits like living in a crematoriums. And even if others are well qualified in all respects, they are not devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sukadeva Goswami continued, in this way, after full deliberation, the goddess of fortune accepted Mukunda as her husband because, although he is independent and not in want of her, he possesses all transcendental qualities and mystic powers and is therefore the most desirable. Mahaprabhu,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, is self-sufficient. Since he is fully independent, he was not in want of support or assistance of Lakshmi Devi. Nonetheless, Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, accepted him as her husband.
So, any points?
There's a nice Vedic point coming here. That even in the olden times, I remember, when the girl is marrying the boy, it's better that the boy is materially high. Not dependent on such marriages, a boy is even more qualified spiritually as well. When such a marriage is, then if the girl is more materially qualified and the boy is dependent on such marriages, sometimes a lot of troubles.
Yeah, it says in the Vedic culture you can marry someone who is less qualified or equal, but the man should not marry a woman who is more qualified. Psychologically, it's difficult like that. It causes problems because the male ego is that he always wants to dominate. So, see, Radha and Krishna are a perfect match because neither is more qualified than the other. So, it's perfect like that. So, the male and female must be equal, or the man in the material world should be slightly more qualified. Because then the male will always feel, if the woman's always superior, then he'll get an inferiority complex and become difficult for him. Male egos are difficult things. One sannyasi told me very recently, I was speaking to him, he said, the problem with the men in this world, they always want to be the... Yeah, so he said they're very, Like males always want to like be strong and like, you know, show their superiority. So Sannyasi was saying to me, he said, it's difficult to associate sometimes with the men in this material world. It's always so much competition and everything's about ego and who did the best, and you know, it's just the nature of male ego. Always wants to dominate, always be superior. So Krishna understands that. So therefore he says, don't marry someone who is better than you, because you won't be able to handle it, and then you'll become disturbed in your consciousness. You won't be satisfied, you won't be peaceful. Marry someone equal or someone who is a little less qualified.
Do the sannyasis have got ego?
What's that?
Sannyasis have got ego.
Sannyasis have got less ego than all of us. If they're Paramahamsa, they have no ego. Like Prabhupada, Prabhupada was Paramahamsa, which means no ego. And sannyasis who are still sadhakas, still becoming perfect, they have less ego than us. Doesn't mean they have no ego, but they have less. Bhakti Charuswami said one time, he said, everyone in the material world has false ego. Everyone has false ego.
But Paramahamsa
has the only person who doesn't have one is a Paramahamsa. Who's become fully detached from his false ego and his material body. Sarva Upadhi Vinir Mukdam, who's released from it.
Liberated.
Yeah, liberated. What is it?
Krishna says also that a man's fame and a man's like prowess does not come out when he shows the domination to a woman. When he goes and shows his heroism to a woman, then it does not, the man does not get his prowess. It is like treating the woman well, then the man gets that the prowess comes out for a man. The way that he treats the woman, that is how he determines whether he is a hero or not. Not by dominating a woman or controlling a woman. That he cannot show, even if he shows his prowess to a woman, it's not going to be considered to be prowess for him. Krishna says,
Where does Krishna say this one?
I read it on.
Krishna says this in one book.
Sastra.
Sure, it's not Lila Maya speaking to her husband?
Not only for my husband, but for everybody.
You show me that Shastra. Lila Maya Samhita. It was written yesterday. Approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Goddess of Fortune placed upon his shoulders the garland of a newly grown lotus flowers, which were surrounded by humming bumblebees searching for honey. Then expecting to get a place on the bosom of the Lord, she remained standing by his side, her face smiling in shyness. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Father of the three worlds, and his bosom is the residence of Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, the proprietor of all opulences. The goddess of fortune, by her favorable and merciful glance, can increase the opulence of the three worlds, along with their inhabitants and their directors, the demigods. So she eternally takes the position of Srivatsa. Srivatsa means Krishna, Narayan, has a golden tuft of hair on his chest. In Vaikuntha, many of the residents of Vaikuntha have Swarupya Mukti, which means they have a form which is very similar to Narayan himself. The difference is that Narayan, he has several distinguishing factors or qualities or marks, and one of them is Srivatsa, which means there's a tuft of hair there, which only the Lord has, and that is Lakshmi. She takes that form so that she can always give benediction to all the devotees who approach the Lord. The inhabitants of Gandhava and Charanaloka then took the opportunity to play their musical instruments, such as conch shells, bugles, and drums. They began dancing and singing with their wives. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the great sage Angira, and similar directors of universal management showered flowers and chanted mantras, indicating the transcendental glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All the demigods, along with the Prajapatis
and their descendants, being blessed by Lakshmi's glance upon them, were immediately enriched with good behavior and transcendental qualities. Thus they were very much satisfied. O King, because of being neglected by the goddess of fortune, the demons and Rakshasas were depressed, bewildered and frustrated, and thus they became shameless. Next appeared Varuni, the lotus-eyed goddess who controls drunkards. With the permission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the demons, headed by Bali Maharaj, took possession of this young girl. O King, thereafter, while the sons of Kashyapa, both demons and demigods, were engaged in churning the ocean of milk, a very wonderful male person appeared. He was strongly built. His arms were long, stout, and strong. His neck, which was marked with three lines, resembled a conch shell. His eyes were reddish, and his complexion was blackish. He was very young. He was garlanded with flowers, and his entire body was fully decorated with various ornaments. He was dressed in yellow garments and wore brightly polished earrings made of pearls. The tips of his hair were anointed with oil, and his chest was very broad. His body had all good features. He was stout and strong like a lion, and he was decorated with bangles. In his hand he carried a jug filled to the top with nectar. This person was Dhanvantari, a plenary portion of Lord Vishnu. He was very conversant with the science of medicine, and as one of the demigods he was permitted to take a share of sacrifices. Upon seeing Dhanvantari carrying the jug of nectar, the demons, desiring the jug and its contents, immediately snatched it away by force. When the jug of nectar was carried off by the demons, the demigods were morose. Thus they sought shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who always desires to fulfill the ambitions of his devotees, saw that the demigods were morose, he said to them, "Do not be aggrieved. By my own energy I shall bewilder the demons by creating a quarrel among them. In this way I shall fulfill your desire to have the nectar." O King, a quarrel then arose among the demons over who would first get the nectar. Each of them said, "You cannot drink it first. I must drink it first. Me first, not you." So what does this sound like? Yeah, it sounds like kids. No, even devoted kids. Mine, 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 mine. I have to have it first. It is mine. You cannot touch it. It is mine. It belongs to me. Do not touch it. That's just the nature of children. And when we get older, then we're more sophisticated. So we don't say it, but that's how we think in the natural world. It is mine. I should get it first. I want it first. It is for my enjoyment. So that is the opposite of spiritual life. Spiritual life is, I want to give it to you. And Prabhupada said in that picture where the gopis were pushing Radha towards Krishna, Prabhupada said that is the mood in the spiritual world. They're pushing the other devotees are pushing the other devotees towards Krishna. But in the material world, even we have our material consciousness comes into spiritual life, and we want to serve the guru. And we push in front of our God brothers and push in front of our God sisters to serve the spiritual master. But the more advanced devotees, they want to encourage the others to approach. And they make arrangements and facilities for the other devotees to serve Guru and Krishna. Everyone wants the association of Guru and Krishna. That's natural. We all want it. Like that. But when we commit offences and when we stand on the head of others in order to get to that position, then we just commit offences. And we don't actually please the Guru and we don't actually please Krishna. So you please Krishna by becoming recognised by Krishna. And how do you become recognised by Guru and Krishna? By your service attitude. And service attitude means that you're pushing others towards Guru and Krishna. That's the best attitude. not looking for recognition all the time. My spiritual master used to say, his disciples, they would cook for him. He said practically they would write their name on the subject. give the cook their lunch, and they want so much recognition. I cook that, and I cook that, and I cook that. And he said, it's not so important. It's not so important. The fact is you cooked it for the guru. You did the service for the guru. It's not the recognition. Yeah? And my spiritual master, sometimes he used to say, you know, if he didn't nod to the devotee, or doesn't look at the devotee, or doesn't compliment the devotee, then it's like they take great offense. Or they become very upset or very despondent. Oh, my guru did not recognize my service. But the guru doesn't need to recognize your service. You should just be doing the service for his pleasure. That's it. Bas, that's the end of it. Right? You're not looking for recognition. So devotees have to have the correct attitude.
See, I was wondering, see, Jalandhar, he also came out from the, during the churning of ocean, who married Brinda Devi later on, Jalandhar, but his name is not mentioned.
Yeah, it may not be that everything is mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. The Bhagavatam just mentions what is important to be mentioned. Some of the demons said, all the demigods have taken part in churning the ocean of milk. Now, as everyone has an equal right to partake in any public sacrifice, according to the eternal religious system, it is befitting that the demigods now have a share of the nectar. O king, in this way the weaker demons forbade the stronger demons to take the nectar. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who can counteract any unfavorable situation, then assume the form of an extremely beautiful woman. This incarnation as a woman, Mohini Murti, was most pleasing to the mind. Her complexion resembled in color a newly grown blackish lotus, and every part of her body was beautifully situated. Her ears were equally decorated with earrings, her cheeks were very beautiful, her nose was raised, and her face full of youthful luster. Her large breasts made her waist seem very thin. Attracted to the aroma of her face and body, bumblebees hummed around her, and thus her eyes were restless. Her hair, which was extremely beautiful, was garlanded with Malika flowers. Her attractively constructed neck was decorated with a necklace and other ornaments. Her arms were decorated with bangles. Her body was covered with a clean sari, and her breasts seemed like islands in an ocean of beauty. Her legs were decorated with ankle bells because of the movements of her eyebrows. As she smiled with shyness and glanced over the demons, all the demigods were saturated with lusty desires.
Demons.
What did I say?
All the demons.
All the demigods. Did I say that? Sorry. Her legs were decorated with ankle bells. Because of her movements of her eyebrows, as she smiled with shyness and glanced over the demons, all the demons were saturated with lusty desires, and every one of them desired to possess her. So the Bhagavatam has already taught us throughout all the cantos that the ultimate weapon of Maya is the opposite sex. Pumsastriya maituni bhavame tam. So the opposite sex is how Krishna bewilders us in this material world. Just like a few months ago, we went for a walk from our farm, and we have one next door neighbor, and he has a lake, so we like to go and visit the lake. And he said to me, you can come and visit the lake, but you have to let me know when you're coming to visit the lake. So I don't always ring him. Sometimes we just go, and then usually he's not there. But so we went, and then he heard us, so he came down to the lake. So I had some of the woofers with me, some boys and some girls. And then when he came, he was a little bit angry, because he saw us there. And he said, why are you here like that? But then as soon as he saw the girl, and she was there, and she's quite a nice girl, as soon as he saw her, he said, oh, no, it's okay. You just see, immediately he became pacified like that. So that's how the material energy controls us, through the opposite sex. Because they've done surveys. What's the quality that men look for the most in women? Beauty. 9 out of 10 men just want a beautiful woman, even though she's completely stupid, right? And she can't cook, right? She doesn't know anything, but if she's beautiful, it's okay, no problem. And what is the most important thing that the women look for in the men? Wealth. 8 out of 10 men. Even if the guy's stupid and he's ugly, but he's rich, then who cares? And that's the material consciousness. That's the material world. So that's how Krishna controls the material energy. So it's easy for him to bewilder the demons. He just sends a beautiful woman, or he himself takes the form of a beautiful woman, and then the demons are easily. And you see that. You know, if you're a man and a beautiful woman comes, then suddenly your mind changes. Right? And if you're a woman and you're attracted to a particular man, then your mind just becomes bewildered. Like that. So that's how the material energy, that's how she captures us. Lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Attraction to the opposite sex. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us to go beyond that attraction by understanding it is an illusion. It's just temporary. Right? The most beautiful woman in this world, she ends up being quite unattractive. You look at the most beautiful woman, then you just give 50 years and then no attraction. Oh, that's all false. Srila Prabhupada ki. Okay.